people, and for them to live like this, seeing every single day what could have been, and Jerusalem al-Quds with Masjid al-Aqsa and the Dome of the Rocks in the background, is utter pain and struggle.
The separation of Jerusalemite Muslims and Christians from Jerusalem al-Quds is rarely ever shown on mainstream Western television, and so before you travel to the West Bank, one would imagine that the situation is completely different from the reality faced here. What my cameraman and I witnessed on the Palestinian side of Israel's wall was the humiliation of Palestinians on a daily basis, and a space allocated for a capital which would hardly drive tourism to a country with its depressing scenery, bringing with it a feeling of walking around in an open-air prison. Even on the other side of the wall, Palestinian homes are constantly being demolished and stolen by Israeli settlers, as Donald Trump emboldens their actions with the decree that Israel's undivided capital is to be Jerusalem al-Quds. The justification given by Israel for such disturbing realities imposed on the ground is that what has been imposed is for Israel's security. But even if that was the truth behind the occupation and violations of international law, this excuse was not accepted internationally by the court of public opinion when it came to apartheid South African whites. So why is it reasonable coming from Israeli Jews, I ask? But the issue of division isn't the only problem facing the Palestinians. There is also the problem of where the two divided peoples would live if remaining segregated, and where any viable borders could possibly exist between Palestinians and the Israelis. The issues of borders is of course made tough due to the Israeli illegal racial colonies, or settlements as they're referred to.
Something that you cannot escape when you come here to the West Bank is seeing and witnessing how deeply entrenched these settlements are into the Palestinian land here.
Currently, over 750,000 illegal Israeli settlers live on stolen Palestinian land, equating to a land grab of 40% of the West Bank. Due to seizure of land, Palestinians currently live in 165 disconnected islands surrounded by checkpoints, military outposts, closed military zones, and settlements. What is perhaps more disturbing, however, is the fact that one of the chief architects of what is supposed to be a peace deal, Jared Kushner, has direct ties to the funding of an illegal settlement named Beit El, with almost $100,000 that we know about. Kushner is also an open supporter of illegal settlements. Understanding that under Trump's so-called peace plan, settlements will remain in place, I traveled to occupied Al-Khalil, or Hebron as it's called, to meet with local human rights activist Issa Amro to learn more about what the situation would remain as in the heart of the illegal settler conflict zone.
Trump's plan is to make this permanent. Trump's plan is about, you know, legitimizing the settlements and legitimizing this apartheid and segregation and separation and keep me without any basic human rights.
We are allowed to film. He's illegal.
Because they don't want us to film their weakness and their truth. They don't want us to expose that Israel is an apartheid state, Israel is not a democracy, and Israel is not a state of law. It's the state of settlers, soldiers, and it's the state of apartheid and segregation.
This is my home.
It's not your home.
This is my country.
It's not your country. Okay, that is the truth here.
Yes.
So the street is closed. All the shops are closed by military orders and marked as closed shops. Look, it's marked, sealed, welded as a closed shop. It was closed first 1994 after the Ibrahim Awards massacre.
And what justification do they give? Why do they say they have to be closed? Do they give you a justification for closing it?
Always, always. The false justification is security. The main reason for it, it's about confiscation and to have the Arab free zone here. Closing the city center. It's the hub of the city, you know. It's the heart of the city. They closed it and they control it and they drive here. We are not allowed to drive.
We're not allowed to drive in our own streets. Our shops are closed. Our houses became empty. They changed the names of the streets from Palestinian Arabic name to Israeli Hebrew names. The road signs are only in English and Hebrew. Israeli flags here. They are taking our identity as Palestinian identity.
And this system right here with the shops closed and everything happening, under Trump's plan, this would remain closed?
It will remain closed. They didn't touch it. They didn't talk about it.
The main entrance to the family is closed. The main road is closed. And we are using the fields to reach the house here. And the family is separated and isolated alone. And the army is occupying the roof. They have a military post on the roof. The family is not allowed to go to the roof.
Yeah.
And they are locked inside the house. And from time to time, the settlers come to the roof, throw stones, throw rocks, throw rubbish to the family without any help. Not only that, the Palestinian ambulance is not allowed to reach here without a special coordination. So you skip all the emergency cases. Mm-hmm. So you are not only sieged by the army and the soldiers, you are seized from any kind of basic human rights.
We continued to film until we reached a military outpost, where we were at first instructed at gunpoint to go back because Palestinians could not walk on the Jewish-only street there. So we filmed secretly as I asked the soldier present why Aisa and my cameraman Hamdi were not able to walk on the road.
So if it belongs only to Jews, then is this not racism?
This is illegal settlements under international law. They take this. Why not one person, one vote? Why not equal rights? Because this here is like in apartheid South Africa. If you went to apartheid South Africa, you would see the same thing. And so this is racism. And racism doesn't change depending upon where you go because of security situation. It's racism. That's it.
I understand what you're saying, but yesterday, the day before, they were trying to stab people in the...
Stab, but you shoot. And you arrest children.
It doesn't matter.
But does that justify hurting them, killing them?
I don't
occupying
care.
Them?
Nobody heard them.
The soldier I just engaged with refused to speak to me until I told him I was not a Palestinian. But many other soldiers had an even more negative attitude towards us, making it clear that Palestinians or any friends of Palestinians were not welcome. After witnessing the situation in El Khalil, I then traveled to Ramallah in order to take part in protests rejecting the deal of the century. At this protest you're seeing alone, tens of protesters were shot and many others gassed, causing them to collapse and convulse.
We have an attack here on a member of the press, clearly marked as press. It's, of course, a violation of international law, firing tear gas everywhere. He passed out unconscious. This man is marked as a press and, of course, is not protesting. He's here to document purely, and he was targeted by the Israelis.
After the demonstration, we found out following a visit to the Ramallah hospital that four young boys were shot with internationally banned bullets. Three were hit in the legs and one in the head. The protests I witnessed, however, were just the tip of the iceberg. Other demonstrations were much more violent and led to the deaths of several young Palestinians. To find out more about why Palestinian people broke out into mass protest against the deal of the century, I met with the world-renowned journalist Jannah Jihad and Palestinian icon Ahed Tamimi, both locals to the village of Nabi Saleh.
So since the announcement of the so-called
first asking Jana what she had witnessed since Donald the announcement of the Trump plan.
As you said, are getting killed, people are getting arrested. I'm facing checkpoints on my way to school every day. Like, for example, yesterday I was just going to my school and then there was this checkpoint. You know, the checkpoints here in the West Bank are not checkpoints. They're just a gate on the street. They usually close it, block the street, and then they go. They don't check the car, they just block it. So, like, I had to take another way that takes me about triple the time to get to my school. I was late to my school. Even today, we were stuck for 2 hours on the checkpoint. Every day since the deal of the century had been declared, you know, people, there are a lot of clashes, people are getting killed, people are getting injured, and it's very sad that we are paying the price of something that we didn't cause.
What we heard from Donald Trump was that when this deal was initially announced, that there would be some sort of peace that would come out of this, and that the Palestinians would receive a great amount of money.
I believe that legalizing what's illegal is not peace. Legalizing occupation, legalizing settlements, it's not what we call peace. And I don't care about money. I just want my land. I want to stay in my house. I want to go to the sea that I've never been to, which is only 30 minutes far from my house, that I can literally see every single morning from the roof of my house that I've never been to. That's what I call peace, but that's not peace. And I don't care about money. What if I came and told you I want half of America? I'd pay you, but I just want half of America. Like, what would you do? You would just leave your houses for money, leave your land, leave your life, your memories, your history for money?
In Ramallah, I witnessed the largest demonstration the city had seen since the time of the Second Intifada, or uprising as it is known in English. What was clear to me in the West Bank was that there was a growing sense of desperation and also unity from the Palestinian people that could be felt building day by day. The desperation for action coming from the threat immediately posed to annex areas such as the Jordan Valley, which is where I began to travel to next.
So we've just entered the Jordan Valley here, and what we witnessed just as we were entering was the closed military zones here, and the soldiers in the fields actually aiming just above children and telling them to duck, using them sort of as firing practice. And then what we also discovered as we were driving along is that two Bedouin children, young children who were riding on donkeys, were also arrested by the army.
The Jordan Valley is home to 70,000 Palestinians, yet is 85% inaccessible to its people, as Israel has turned the land into a military training ground and allowed for illegal settlers to come in and make goods to sell around the world. The area is, under international law, recognized as Palestinian land, which is to be the future agricultural hub of Palestine. Its undeveloped areas could also be used for energy projects, water extraction, and urban centers.
One of the most important things to understand about the Jordan Valley is that this land here constitutes 30% of the West Bank, and of course means the loss of the most fertile agricultural land for a potential future Palestinian state. What you can see straight away when you come here to the Jordan Valley is that the people primarily here are building their houses as tents and as sort of cave structures and things like this, because the Israelis don't allow them here in Area C to actually build, have the permits to build homes. So if they were to actually build proper homes already before the land being annexed, and of course these people inevitably being expelled, then their homes would be bulldozed.
The conditions that have been imposed in the plan says that there is no Palestinian state. So what will happen with us? We are here more than 50% of the population. Now every year they demolish about 500 houses there. This plan says no Palestinian state and no sovereignty, no borders, no water, no air, no underground. Nothing for the Palestinians. In Jordan Valley, we are 70,000 Palestinians, and and the Israeli settlers are only 8,000. So we have to stay, and our existence there will be the main factor to stop the century plan.
It was clear from even before U.S. President Donald Trump, alongside Israeli Premier Benjamin Netanyahu, announced the details of the plan, that the Israeli regime sought to annex the Jordan Valley, northern Dead Sea, and illegal settlements, throwing away all the progress of work done since 1988 between Palestinians and Israelis. Looking on at the situation on the ground in Palestine, it was clear that a two-state solution looked impossible, and that a one-state solution where Palestinians could live with equal rights to Israelis was a long way from coming to fruition. However, the younger generation of Palestinians served as a great source of hope that one day liberation could perhaps be in sight, and that the failure of the old is now being replaced by a new vision for peace coming from the young.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll try to have a look at the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode. Dear listeners, let's listen to 210th, 211th, and 212th verses of this chapter, chapter Shu'ara.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَمَا تَنَزَّلَتْ بِهِ الشَّيَاطِينَ.
And the devils have not brought the revelation down.
وَمَا يَنْبَغِي لَهُمْ وَمَا يَسْتَطِيعُونَ.
It is not allowable for them, nor would they be able.
إِنَّهُمْ عَنِ السَّمْعِ لَمَعْزُولُونَ.
Indeed, they, from its hearing, are removed.
وَمَا تَنَزَّلَتْ بِهِ الشَّيَاطِينَ. The Satans have not brought it down. وَمَا يَنْبَغِي لَهُمْ. And it behooves them not. وَمَا يَسْتَطِيعُونَ. And nor they can do it. إِنَّهُمْ عَنِ السَّمْعِ لَمَعْزُولُونَ. Verily, they are banished from hearing it. Regarding these verses, dear listeners, we mentioned that the verses are here to answer one important accusation. The pagans thought, and they used to tell each other and others, that this Holy Quran is revealed and sent down by some Satans. But the Holy Quran decisively says, مَا تَنَزَّلَتْ بِهِ الشَّيَاطِينَ. The Satans have not brought it down because they do not have the ability. They are impotent. They are powerless and incapable of bringing some words like the Holy Quran down. وَمَا يَسْتَطِيعُونَ. Nor they can do it. Because this Quran is all about righteousness. It's all about good inspirations and goodness. So its content is the proof of its authenticity. But it clearly shows that this Quran was never adept to the satanic considerations and evil inspirations. And then the verse continues, إِنَّهُمْ عَنِ السَّمْعِ لَمَعْزُولُونَ. They are banished from hearing it. So, as we said in the previous episode, some verses of the Holy Quran, along with some traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, suggest that previously, the Satans used to go into the skies and they could take some matters, some words, by eavesdropping. And they used to tell these to their friends. But after the birth of the Prophet ﷺ, this was completely stopped. There was an end put to this kind of eavesdropping. And the pagans also knew this matter themselves. And it is for this reason that, as an evidence, the Holy Quran has emphasized on it in these verses. إِنَّهُمْ عَنِ السَّمْعِ لَمَعْزُولُونَ. Verily, they are banished from hearing it.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
So, by the birth of the Prophet ﷺ and by his advent, the eavesdropping of the Satans was absolutely stopped and it was ceased for them. They could not understand anything in the heavens and they could not, as a result, communicate these news to their friends. And the pagans also knew this. So this accusation is now completely answered and it is rejected in three ways. The accusation that the Holy Quran is the work of the Satans. It is revealed by the Satans. This accusation, by these three verses, is answered. First, the lack of conspiracy of the content of the Holy Quran with satanic inspirations. This shows that the content of this book does not conform to the way the Satans act. Second, the lack of ability of Satans to do such thing, because they do not have the ability, and even the ones who were able to do such things, there was a stop after the arrival of the Holy Prophet ﷺ. And the third point, or third answer, is the prohibition of the Satans from eavesdropping. إِنَّهُمْ عَنِ السَّمْعِ لَمَعْزُولُونَ. So this means they are banished from hearing it, and they have no other way to find out what's going on. So this Quran can never be brought down by the Satans. مَا تَنَزَّلَتْ بِهِ الشَّيَاطِينَ Satans have not brought it down. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We are done with these verses and we will move on to the next ones in the next episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to sit us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Rabbana, Rabbana.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
Rabbana, Rabbana, ya Rabbana, ya Rabbana, ya Hayyu, ya Qayyum, nawwir qalbana.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hussain Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be looking at a very important question, and that question is about the love of God and its relation to fasting. As you know, we are in the month of Ramadan. This is a very beautiful month. Spiritually, it is a good opportunity for all of us to turn back to God, to make repentance, to do tawbah. This is the month in which the Holy Quran was revealed. It's the month in which we are obliged to fast, as you know. It is also the month in which the Layali al-Qadr, the nights of ordainment, fall. It's the month in which the Imam Ali alayhi salam was martyred. So there's a lot of distinctions about this month, and for this month it has a lot of interesting features to it. One of them is the fact, like we mentioned, that we have to fast. Right, so the question that we want to pose today is this, that we know that fasting is an integral part of religion. In fact, it's one of the pillars of the practical aspect. As you know, religion has two aspects, a theoretical dimension, dimension related to belief, and secondly is a dimension related to practice, a practical dimension. And fasting is one of the pillars of that dimension, along with the ritual prayer, the Hajj, the pilgrimage to Mecca, and also the jihad and the zakat. But we want to ask, even though it's integral, is there something which could perhaps be more important than it? And the question, answer to that question, fortunately, has come to us in the form of a hadith, a prophetic hadith, narrated from the Holy Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. The Prophet said to one of his companions, "O servant of Allah, love for the sake of Allah, and hate for the sake of Allah, and befriend for the sake of Allah, and contest for the sake of Allah." For Allah's guardianship is attained only by that, and man will not find the taste of faith, though his prayers and fasting be much, unless he behaves this in this way. Right? So true faith is not acquired simply by fasting and prayers. Rather, one also has to love for the sake of Allah, and befriend people for the sake of Allah, hate some people for the sake of Allah, you know, have enmity against some people for the sake of Allah, and so on and so forth. In continuation, the Prophet said, in this present day, the brotherhood and friendship of the people are mainly for the sake of this world. They love each other for its sake and hate each other for its sake. But, you know, the Prophet said that this is not good, you know. We have to love each other for the sake of Allah. In another hadith, the Prophet has been reported to have said, the best of practices is to love for the sake of Allah and to hate for the sake of Allah. Afdalul a'mal al-hubbu fillah wal-bughdu fillah ta'ala. Of course, if the second phrase al-bughdu fillah hadn't been added, somebody might have interpreted this hadith to mean loving God. But because of this, the second phrase and clause that has been added to the hadith, it's necessary to interpret the hadith to mean loving certain people for the sake of God and disliking certain people for the sake of God. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at what could be greater than fasting in the light of the prophetic hadith of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Aperture.
During the Vietnam War, the U.S. military engaged in an aggressive program of chemical warfare codenamed Operation Ranch Hand. Now, from 1961 to 1971, the U.S. military sprayed a range of herbicides across more than 4.5 million acres of Vietnam to destroy the forest cover and food crops used by North Vietnamese. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. Agent Orange, which contains the deadly chemical dioxin, was the most commonly used herbicide. It was later proven to cause serious health issues, including cancer, birth defects, rashes, and severe psychological and neurological problems. But the Vietnamese were not the only ones affected. U.S. soldiers unknowingly brought the legacy of Agent Orange back home. Join us for this week's Aperture as we meet three children of U.S. veterans who fall victim to Agent Orange and follow them as they travel to Vietnam to face their demons. Here's the first part.
All I ever heard was war stories about how horrible it was and how violent everything was and that there was just death and destruction. And that's the picture that was painted in my head of what Vietnam was. And it scared me half to death when I was getting ready to come over here, to the point where I was actually shaking on the plane on my way here because I did not know what to expect.
Traveling here, someone said, you know, Heather travels back to the land of her father's demons. Vietnam is still a very scary, dangerous place to them.
I was actually very nervous and very scared. Several of my father's friends kind of scared me about some of the things that I may see and hear and experience. Their vision of Vietnam was a war-torn, angry place.
Do you guys have any bottled water before we get going, just in case?
My name is Josh Kelly. I was born on August 18th, 1975.
My name is Heather Bowser. My maiden name is Morris.
My name is Rachel Harding. I was born in northern Indiana near Chicago.
My dad was Daniel Kelly. He was in the U.S. Marine Corps, and he fought in Vietnam.
My parents had married 9 days before he had left for Vietnam. They said that, you know, if they had 9 days being together, that's what they wanted to do.
My father got his draft papers when he turned 18 and chose to marry my mother before he left. They got married, and 2 weeks later, he was deployed to Vietnam.
I've been trying to find out what exactly happened when he was there, because when I was younger, I tried to block the stories out because some of them were so scary and so violent and all that, that I just tried to not even listen to them because I didn't want to hear it because they scared the fuck out of me because I was just a kid.
When they came home, they wanted to put the war behind them. The Vietnam War was a very difficult political time, civil rights time, and so wanting to put it behind them, start their family, and move on.
As soon as he came home, they chose to wait to have children. They waited about 7 years before they decided to try, and I was the firstborn. The string's already broken, and he doesn't really care. It keeps changing fast. It don't last long. It's the Colorado Rocky Mountain High.
So my mother had two miscarriages. She lost two children. And no one in our family had had any kind of problems in that respect. So it was very unexpected. And then in 1972, my mother was pregnant again and felt that she had gone into labor early. She was not due for a while. They went to the hospital. She had already lost two children, so she was very scared. She thought she might be miscarrying again at a very late time in the pregnancy. They rushed her into the hospital, and she said, I'm in labor. And she was very thin, and they kind of said, no, you're okay. It's okay. You're going to be all right. You're not in labor. You barely look pregnant. She was 7 months along at that point. My mother woke up to my father sitting at her bedside telling her, and it's hard to talk about, but he said, Sharon, she's damaged. And that's what she woke up to. So I can only imagine how scary that was.
The doctors, as soon as I was born, they took me from my mom and they put me in a little incubator, and then they rushed me off out of the room. They didn't explain anything to my mom. They just said that there was problems.
Various doctors approached my mother at different times and asked what she had done to her child. What had she done to cause such terrible problems?
They brought her over to show me to her for about 5 minutes, and then they put me on an airplane and they flew me to another state, and they kept me in the incubator and they put me in intensive care, and they had all kinds of doctors looking at me and checking to see if I was gonna live or die or what the deal was, because missing my arms and my leg, they weren't sure what all was wrong with me. They started to take me to the doctors and stuff out there, and because they were big hospitals and there was lots of doctors from around the world and everything, they wanted to try a whole bunch of different surgeries and stuff that were like experimental surgeries that nobody had ever tried before. Like one of them was that they wanted to grow my arms back, and the way that they were going to do it is they were going to cut the skin open, break the bone, and then they were going to drill holes through it and put screws in it and put plates to separate the bone, and the bone would grow in between the gaps. And they said that it could take up to 5 to 10 years for my arms to finish growing back, and that it would be an extremely painful.
I want to go back to real quick to one memory I had in kindergarten. We were learning about our hands. This is your left hand, this is your right hand. And it's always a memory that I kind of laugh about. I loved school. I couldn't wait to go to school. I was so excited. I wanted to read and do that stuff. So we're sitting in this circle, and the little children are sitting there, and I can just remember this to this day. And there was like a board on the floor, and it had a picture, an outline of a hand and another hand. And each child was to go around and take their turn and say, this is my left hand, this is my right hand, this is my left hand, this is my right hand. And so I remember just being anxious and excited to do my turn. And I went to put my hand in, and I just, at that moment, I was like, oh, okay. Because they had the outline, and my fingers didn't match the outline. And I was like, huh, okay, this is my left hand, this is my right hand, but they don't look like that left hand and that right hand. And that was kind of like, okay, I'm different. That's different.
Pretty much all my life, as far back as I can remember, I knew I was different because I was always going to the doctors. And I would always see the other kids playing and stuff, and I couldn't really go play with them because I either had doctor's appointments or they didn't want anything to do with me.
I have lost 19 children. I never carried more longer than 8.5 weeks, and I would lose my children. I have hypothyroidism, the infertility issue, and psoriatic arthritis. Those are the three biggest ones that I have that affect my life personally. And my family could not understand, my father included, could not understand, where did this come from? Nobody else in the family's ever had this. How come you're suffering from this and nobody else ever has?
I've seen lots of different kids that had disabilities and stuff from being like in the hospitals and stuff all the time. And some of them are so similar that it would have to be from the same thing. The similarities in our disabilities is so much alike. There's no way to deny that it was the same thing that caused both of them.
These are the structural formulas for 2,4-dichlorophenoxyacetic acid, commonly known as 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T. From these chemicals are made a large number of closely related compounds, which are sold commercially for weed and brush control. The Secretary of Defense initiated a project to determine whether visibility in troublesome jungle vegetation in the Republic of Vietnam could be improved by aerially applied chemical sprays. In that country, jungle growth, swamp foliage, and roadside vegetation retains its leaves the year around. Consequently, it affords ideal concealment to guerrilla terrorists who sporadically attack the free people of Vietnam. As a result of these tests, defoliation spraying was placed on an operational basis. Those chemicals already proven most effective as defoliants will continue to be used until faster acting types.
So my father says that he said that there was spraying of his base pretty regularly. I found out since that his base was practically sprayed every day, and that is also due to its proximity to Benoit. Benoit was the epicenter of where Ranch Hand worked out of. So if they had anything left on their missions, they came around that area and used it. The perimeter was hand sprayed, aerial spraying with the C-123 planes.
My dad was in the U.S. Marine Corps. He was stationed in the Chulai Air Base, and while he was there, he was exposed to lots of Agent Orange. They sprayed it on everything. It was in the food, it was in the water, it was on their clothes, it was on the plants, it was on the guns, the ammo, everything had Agent Orange on it. So he was heavily exposed to Agent Orange.
North Vietnam charged today that defoliants have produced many instances of miscarriages, congenital defects, and monstrosities among children.
As we anticipated, the Vietnamese doctors that we've met with very much share our concerns about the effects of Agent Orange.
Although that war was long ago, there is lingering anger about the United States' use of a controversial defoliant spread by American aircraft on the jungles there.
Milton Ross, a special forces advisor near Pleiku, has a son born without the tips of his fingers.
Frank Moore is nearly dead from cancer. He thinks the cancer was caused by chemical defoliants he was exposed to as a soldier in Vietnam.
My dad explained to me about how dangerous the stuff was because it would kill off big old trees and everything in just a couple of days. He would tell me the stories about how he would have to mix it and he would have to load it into the tanks, and he would put the tanks on the planes and the helicopters and everything while he was in the war.
It's still causing trouble, and all of the people that have lost their lives to Agent Orange, and this is kind of where it began. So it's very sad.
We found out that the rate of miscarriages, fetal death in utero, and birth defects are 4 times higher than the exposed, among the exposed, than the non-exposed. We have carried out some more studies. I am now very sure, certain, that toxic chemicals cause many things to my people, to the exposed people. Cannot deny the relationship between dioxin with the abnormal outcome of pregnancy, among the exposed people.
After the wartime, after 75, his dad came back here and they have the first child. But due to the Agent Orange, she or he died after 10 days. The biggest biggest child of the family is a normal child because he was born before the time that the death came to the army.
But do you know in America who carries the pain of Agent Orange? The veterans who serve. The veterans feel responsible.
Yes.
Our fathers felt responsible for us. Even for in Vietnam. I mean, they felt responsible. The soldier, not the chemical companies or the government that made the decisions.
So my father felt extreme guilt. He felt like he had caused my birth defects. He had told my mother that every time he looked at me, he felt that it was his responsibility. He had caused this to me. And that's a major problem in the United States, trying to work through the Agent Orange issue, is that the veterans feel extreme guilt.
The man that my mom knew from the time she was 4 did not come home from Vietnam. He's still wandering around in the jungle somewhere. He came home a very angry man, very sad man.
My dad was suffering more and more from his PTSD. He was having other health issues and he was getting weak, and he couldn't do the things that he could do before, and his health was just going downhill.
Thank you.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Dr. Shomali.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. So now what I want to do, inshallah, is to reflect on some of the du'as for the last 10 nights of the month of Ramadan. These du'as also teach us what are the things that we should focus on. In Al-Kafi, Shaykh Kulayni quotes this from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. And you have it in also Mafatihul Janan. Very famous dua that, alhamdulillah, our community in mosques, you know, places, you know, of worship gathering, they recite. So this is Imam Sadiq alayhi salam saying that in every night, in the last 10 nights, we should recite this. أعوذ بجلال وجهك الكريم أن ينقضي عني شهر رمضان أو يطلع الفجر من ليلتي هذه ولك قبلي ذنب أو تبعة تعذبني علي. My Lord, I seek refuge with you, with your face, which is honorable, with the glory of your honorable face. Allah is Kareem. And when you go to Kareem, to someone who is very noble, very honorable, a great gentleman, then they are not going to disappoint you. So we have this request from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that, you know, please don't let this happen, that month of Ramadan finishes, or this night finishes, while still I have some sins which you are going to punish me for them, or there are burdens caused by sins that you are going to take me, you know, responsible and accountable for them. So please, in this night, before we reach Fajr, don't forgive me and free me from sins and their consequences and their burdens and the darkness they cause, the blockage they cause. Free us. So this is our last chance. If we don't get rahmah and maghfirah of Allah for any obstacle in us, then we are really mahroom, deprived. Rasulullah said, Al-mahroom man hurima qufran Allah fi hadha ash-shahr. The real deprived person is the one who is not able to be forgiven in this month. Kaf'ami in Al-Balad Al-Amin, he was a great scholar who had two books of dua, Misbah and also Balad Al-Amin. He was from South Lebanon. He quotes again from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Kulayni also quoted from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, in the last 10 nights of the month of Ramadan, after namaz wajib or mustab, obligatory or recommended salat, used to read this. Allahumma addi anna haqqa ma madha min shahr Ramadan. O Allah, please, on our behalf, you fulfill the right of months of Ramadan, whatever has gone. So it's some 20 days since months of Ramadan has started. Every moment has some right upon us. Every day has great right upon us. So please, on our behalf, I cannot fulfill all the rites of the month of Ramadan. I need your help. Allahumma adda anna. On our behalf, you do ada, you deliver the rite of the month of Ramadan, which has expired. Waghfir lana taqsirana fi. Please forgive us our shortcomings. We didn't act as we were supposed to. Even we didn't act as we wanted. Maybe before the month of Ramadan, we had better expectations of ourselves, and we didn't even meet our own expectations. وَتَسَلَّمُهُ مِنَّا مَقْبُولًا. Please accept it from us. Whatever we have done in this month of Ramadan, please accept from us. وَلَا تُؤَاخِذْنَا بِإِسْرَافِنَا عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِنَا. Please don't question us. Don't take us into justice because of the injustice we have done to ourselves, because of doing things in excess to ourselves. وَجَعَلْنَا مِنَ الْمَرْحُومِينَ وَلَا تَجْعَلْنَا مِنَ الْمَحْرُومِينَ. Marhum is the one who has received mercy. Mahrum is the one who is deprived. O Allah, please include us among the people who are marhum, who have received mercy, not from the people who were deprived mercy. I told you, Rasulullah said, Al-mahrum man hurma ghufran Allah fi hadha shahr. So, this is our constant concern, especially now that month of Ramadan is going to finish. What we have done? We are in the best time, and Allah is most merciful, most kind. Everything is so available, so easy. If we don't manage to get Allah's acceptance, Allah's pleasure, Allah's forgiveness and rahmah, then we are really deprived. Sayyid ibn Tawus in Iqbal, again, Iqbalul A'mal, says that Ibn Abi Umair narrated from Murazim from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, again for the last 10 nights, that Imam Sadiq used to read this in every night in the last 10 nights. Allahumma innaka qulta fi kitabika al-munzal. O Allah, you have said in your book, which you have sent down, Shahru Ramadan الذي أنزل فيه القرآن هدى للناس وبينات من الهدى والفرقان. The month of Ramadan is the month in which Quran is sent down for guidance people as clear signs of guidance and furqan. Quran is furqan, separates between haq and batil, between truth and falsehood. فعظمت حرمة شهر رمضان بما أنزلت فيه من القرآن وخصصته بليلة القدر وجعلتها خيرا من ألف. You have increased, raised the respect for the month of Ramadan by sending Quran down in that month, by putting Laylatul Qadr, which is better than 1,000 months, in the month of Ramadan. Now, Allahumma, this is our last dua, and we read it and at the same time we mean it as dua. Allahumma wa hadhihi ayyamu shahr ramadan qad inqadat wa layalihi qad tasarramat. O Allah, these are days of Ramadan which have expired and nights which have gone. وَقَدْ سَرْتُ يَا إِلَٰهِ مِنْهُ إِلَىٰ مَا أَنْتَ أَعْلَمُ بِهِ مِنِّي. And what I have got from these days and nights, you know better. You know my condition. You know whether I have achieved something or not. وَأَحْصَى لِعَدَدِهِ مِنَ الْخَلْقَ. Better than any person, you have comprehensive list of what we have done and whether they are accepted or not.
Dear listeners of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, you can follow this program entitled Minbar every day in the month of Ramadan. If you have any suggestion, you can send us your email at englishradio@irib.ir.
Love is everywhere. So much peace fills up the air. Ramadan, month of peace.